You are listening to a podcast from West Hill United Church, located in Scarborough, Ontario, Canada. These podcasts are made possible by the generous support of our listeners, volunteers, and members of our community. To donate, go to our website, www.westhill.net, and click on the Canada Helps button, or go to westhill.net/donate.
Good morning. Good morning. My name is John DePetty, and as we do every Sunday when we start our services, we acknowledge that we are on the traditional territories of the Mississauga, of the New Credit First Nations lands, which were previously occupied by the Seneca and Huron-Wendat First Nations. Welcome to our first service of spring. Okay, then, before we move on to greetings, we have a special treat for you. Steve?
Thank you.
damn. If that isn't a West Hill moment, I don't know what is. Man.
No, Steve, I do want you to come up. When Steve was practicing that this morning, I said to him that for him to be singing that song, given the work and the witness that he creates every week in the volunteer work that he does, that's a really powerful song, and I didn't know how he could sing it without crying. It might be because he's been working on it for so long, but I knew the rest of us would be. And he shared with me a moment that had come out of some of that work that he does with Pathways, and I wanted him to come and share that with you, just that brief story.
This is a lot easier to do than sing that song. Okay, thank you. So as Greta mentioned, I do volunteer in an after-school program called Pathways Education, and a couple of weeks ago, it was a slow day, and I was looking for somebody to help, and I found this boy who was sitting there complaining that the story that he had to read was boring, and he didn't want to answer any of the questions. So I said, well, what if I read the story aloud to you? Let's see if it's really that boring. So as it turns out, it was a story called The Eagle and the Brave. And it goes like this. There was an eagle egg that had been taken from its nest and put in a chicken coop. And when the eagle egg hatched, the eagle was raised as a chicken, and it was on the ground, you know, pecking at the seeds like all the other chickens. And then one day, this Indian brave, I'm not making that up, that's part of the story. I wouldn't use that term, but this brave walks by and says to the farmer, that ain't no chicken. That's an eagle. And the farmer says, well, prove it. So he says, well, I'll take it up to the top of the barn. And tries to make it fly, and the eagle wouldn't fly. So he says, I got a better idea. I'll take it up to the top of the peak of the highest mountain I can find. And sure enough, he gets there, and a gust of wind comes along, catches the eagle, and it soars off into the heavens. So I said to my friend, he had to answer all the literal questions. You know, the what next questions, and then he got to the final question, which was, what's the point of the story? What's the message? And he's fumbling through the pages trying to find the part where it says what the message of the story was. And I said, that won't help you. I said, you know what the story is. What's the point of the story? And he says, I don't know. So I said, well, what if you were, all your life you've been told you were a chicken, and you knew you weren't a chicken? What would change that? And he looks at me and he says, a gust of wind and somebody to help me.
Thank you, Steve, for the song and for the story. Scott.
Grounded, Guided, Growing, A Time for Centering, from Scott Kearns.
I changed that slide just a little bit, and with those little dots there, just to put it in a different phrasing. When we think of what grounds us, what grounds me, I can think of a lot of things that make me feel steady and secure and okay, even if things are going rough. Sometimes that's a person, sometimes it's a place or a thing. But when we really get down to it here, we think, what if some of that disappeared? What if I couldn't find that? So what underneath do we ground ourselves in that we know is there? And as broad and specific as that sounds, we try on the idea of grounding ourselves in this life, this interconnected web of life that no matter what else happens, I am part of it. I am a member of it. I impact it, it impacts me. And that is a solid ground, because as I said before, if it disappears, you're gone too. So it's the one absolute. And then what guides me? Well, sometimes things are guiding me, my actions that I'm choosing, and I have to think about that. That's not what I really wanted to be, you know, guided by right there. So what we do here and what we do during the week is keep reminding ourselves, given those impacts that we have and that come upon us, I want to keep choosing compassion. I want to keep choosing fairness and integrity and responsibility and gentleness and tenderness with one another and with myself. So keep choosing it. It really is a recommitment all the time. And then the last one is just to keep growing. Sometimes you can grow more, you know, grumpy, or you can grow all sorts of things more. So in order to be growing more loving, we need wisdom. And sometimes wisdom is penetrating. I have a friend who gives me wisdom even when I don't ask for it. You know those kind of friends? You don't ask her, and it's like, oh, no, don't like that. Oh, yeah, that's true. If you ever had those, you know, let's take it in and live it. So let's grow together with that. I'll just play for a little bit. And when I stop playing just sort of nothing, I mean, like no tune, and then I move into the song we're going to sing, I would invite you to just hum along with it, it just because it sounds so nice when you do. So I'll just...
We have a number of readings this morning. I think those are from last week.
Yes, they are.
Our readings this morning are, the first reading this morning comes from William Urey. William is kind of a global negotiator, but he's probably better known for writing a couple of books. One was Getting to Yes, Negotiating Agreement Without Giving In, and The Positive Power of No, How to Say No and Still Get to Yes. His words: our goal cannot and should not be to eliminate conflict. For conflict is as natural and necessary as rainfall. Like rainfall, however, too much conflict at once can cause huge amounts of damage. Just as we control floods by constructing a series of canals, sluices, dams to divert excess water, so we may be able to channel conflict into cooperation by employing a series of third-side approaches. The strategy is to catch conflict as early as possible before it escalates. In Shakespeare's words, a little fire is quickly trodden out, which, being suffered, rivers cannot quench. Conflict, after all, does not come out of nowhere, but typically proceeds from latent tension, and from there crosses the threshold of destructive conflict and violence. As third-siders, our aim is not to suppress conflict altogether, but simply to keep the trajectory of escalation below this threshold. And our second reading was penned by John Lubbock. The Right Honorable John Lubbock was the first Baron of Avebury. He was a banker, a liberal politician, a philanthropist, a scientist, and a polymath. I had to go look that up. I wasn't sure what a polymath is, and I found out that it's basically someone who knows a lot about a lot. His words: what we do see depends mainly on what we look for. In the same field, the farmer will notice the crop, the geologist the fossils, botanist the flowers, artists the coloring, sportsman the cover for the game. Though we may all look at the same things, it does not follow that we should see them. Offered is wisdom for the journey.
Walk in its
light. Focused Moments from Greta Vosper.
I've made kind of a quick decision, and that is that since it's 10 to 12, We're going to carry on with the conflict perspectives in, June or something, when we next have a free Sunday. Because it's good stuff, but I don't want to do it today. There's too much. There's even PowerPoint slides. I mean, I don't do that very often, but there's even PowerPoint slides. So I'll do a little bit, but you need to be at the piano, honey. I do have a focus moment, which is on conflict. This is the third week we've been looking at conflict. Initially, I was just going to talk about blame, and that's actually the very end part of this long exploration of it. And then last week we looked at it again, and this week I wanted to bring you the roles that William Ury has identified that work for people who are bringing the third side. You heard the reading from him this morning that John shared, talked about us third siders. And third siders, as I shared last week, are those that are not the one or the two in the argument. There's always two sides to a fight or an argument or to a conflagration. But it's the third side that can take perspective. And we can do that while we're in it, but it often takes a third side. And Ury has identified 10 roles that participate in that side. And I'll go through them briefly, but really I wanted to speak to you about what the cost of conflict is in our lives and how we can live these roles out within it. So the focus moment is about conflict and how so much of it starts and how so much of it might be eased before it even starts. And Yuri's biggest thing is that if conflict can be prevented, not stifled. It will always happen as a creative force in our world. But if it can be prevented from escalating, then that's a very important thing that we can do. And so the focus moment is about preventing it from escalating. Her head bowed over the table. The tiniest of smiles touched the corner of her lips, curling one side up as she chased a bit of pie on her plate. Charming, I thought. But the smile sent the person across from her into a spiral of crazy. Voice raised, tone angry and accusing. She looked up, the smile smoothed out across her face, and reached out her hand to touch her dinner partner's arm. What had been seen, a smile or a smirk? Either equally possible in that curving lift. The answer lay in the reaching, perhaps to stall, perhaps simply to stop, but most surely to soothe. To just briefly go through the roles that Ury notes, without the PowerPoint slides that would probably distract us too much. There are three levels of conflict that he thinks point to what's going on so we can discern how to be in them. And we all are familiar with these from sitting at a dinner table with someone who misinterprets something that we say or do, and the escalation begins. To the place where it starts, living itself out across the table as we throw angry responses to each other, to the marching out of the room through separate doors and never speaking to each other in a civil tone again, or at least for a period of time. Those are the areas where conflict can be prevented, and through the reaching out of a hand and the calming the situation down, resolved when it gets to a point where there are two entrenched positions, and contained when it spills over into, in our world, often to violence, and in our personal relationships sometimes even to violence, even if it's only a verbal violence. So Yuri takes those three different stages of conflict and talks about the different roles for the third sider to play. The one who, as last week I spoke about, how he talks about being in the balcony, taking a balcony perspective on what's happening in front of you, what you're seeing going on in the conflict in front of you. And when we take that balcony perspective, we get to consider the wider issues at play, the other individuals who are affected by the conflict, sometimes without being party to it at all, but whose lives will be changed because of it. And we can bring that to the conversation and change it, sort of. So he has these different roles, and they're almost self-explanatory, but he goes into them with examples and quite a little bit of engagement in his book, The Third Side, Why We Fight and Whether We Can Stop, or something like that. I can't remember the full title. But he goes into them with some examples from a very rich and long history of conflict and negotiation, which he has done around the world in many different settings. Even spending a considerable length of time in the mines during some mining conflicts in the States, actually going down and being in the mines with the miners in order to find a way to get into the conversation in a third side way. So in the prevent areas, he talks about the reasons that conflict arises, and then he identifies a type of person that can respond to each of those. Oh, he's actually got that up. That's great. That's the contain part, but we're at prevent. So the things that cause it are frustrated needs, poor skills, and weak relationships. And we can, if we take just those three things and think about the world, think about needs that are not met in the world. Like we have a lot of our needs met, and all of our necessary life necessities met. We have free health care, the situations that we talked about in our sharing time. If those had happened in other places in the world, lives would be dramatically different than the lives that are seeing healing and wholeness return are doing at this point in time. So you know, needs, if we think about the altercations that are happening in the world and the level of needs that are not being met, it becomes pretty clear. That not having our needs leads to conflict. Poor skills, when people don't have skills to deal with conflict, they don't know how to respond to a situation of challenge. And then when people have weak relationships, when I don't know who you are, and so I don't care about you, I can do anything and to you. And so relationships need to be built. So those roles that he talks about there are the provider, the person who can provide the needs. Like, is that who can provide the needs? And there are a whole lot of things about that that need to be fleshed out. But generally, there's a provider, there's the teacher, and there's the bridge builder. The teacher helps you learn the skills, and the bridge builder helps bring people together. Then in the second area, when we get into resolution, when conflict is already engaged and going at things, the reasons for that are people have different interests. They don't agree on what needs to be done or what is good for the situation, so their interests conflict. Or they have a disagreement about rights. One person says they have rights, and the other person or the other party, the other nation, says they have rights to something. So who has rights in the situation? And there's unequal power. Although each party usually has some form of power that they can enact, and they will use that if it gets to that, if they're not able to meet the needs in another way. And then there are injured relationships. So quickly, Yuri turns to the roles, and they're obvious in this, and that is the mediator is the person who tries to bring people together to have conversation, the arbiter who identifies, okay, these are the rights, this is the law, this is what you have to do in this situation. And we live in a fairly litigious society. We don't live in the United States, but we still live in a fairly litigious society where those rights and responsibilities are set out. The equalizer who balances power in some way by bringing people who have less power, by giving them voice and some power, and by ensuring that the people who have power, who can walk away from the situation and say, screw you, actually come to the table. So that's an important piece of that. And then there's the healer, who works on those relationships that have been have been damaged. So then the final one is the contain, and this is where things have erupted. There's often violence, there's often injury, and the situation is volatile if it hasn't already exploded. And so there's those situations arise when people's needs have not been attended to, when they've been articulated over and over and over again, or rights have been denied over and over and over again, and no one has paid any attention to that. When there is no limitation on the power of particular groups, when they have not had their rights identified and they have simply gone wherever they have wanted to go, and when there is no protection for the vulnerable. So again, we see easily the roles that Yuri comes up with. The witness, the person who just stands and witnesses what is going on, a group that can witness, a group of people who can wander a community on a regular basis to witness to what's happening within it. The referee, who is the one that actually says, okay, whoa, time out, you have to stop here in some way or another, that brings two warring nations to a table to have that conversation, and the peacekeeper. Scott and I had a conversation on the way in this morning. Everyone in his workplace is going to wear red on Fridays for this month in order to honor our troops. So we were talking about what that means. And it was so enlightening for me to read Yuri's understanding of peacekeeping. He talked about them as the new warriors. War used to be hand-to-hand combat. It used to be where you looked in the eyes of the person that you were going to take down in the fight. And war isn't like that anymore. You can sit in a bunker in Idaho and bomb someone somewhere else in the world. Peacekeepers, Yuri says, are the new warriors because they're on the ground where the violence is happening. They're the ones who are looking in the eyes of the people who are trying to perpetrate that violence, and they're the ones that are putting themselves at risk. So peacekeepers are actually far more at risk than those who are in the armed forces who are engaged in actual conflict. So peacekeepers are much more at risk, they're much more vulnerable, and they're a presence that is significant. So we talked about supporting our peacekeepers, because that's generally the places that our Canadians often are. Anyway, and then I go into a whole bunch of the tasks of there, but what I really wanted to get to, and it's now 1 minute after 12, what I wanted to get to were the questions. How do you play out a role in conflict in your life? And how would establishing an understanding, a comfort with the language of different roles, help you with that conflict? I mean, some of us have no conflict in our life whatsoever. And others have a considerable amount. We now have a committee we can deal with it with, right? So I'm going to take everything I said about you to the committee in writing. That'll be a good start. But I think that our communities, we don't think of those roles. We don't think of ourselves as third side practitioners. We don't see how in our own communities we are, by our silence, almost complicit in the conflict that is going on. Like, how can we witness what's going on? How can we articulate that when someone else can't say it? How can we be present to groups that hold power that needs to be limited in some way? How can we walk with those who don't have power or who feel they don't have power in order to empower them and be present to them? I think that the conversations that can come out of this kind of work are rich and vast, and I think that they are responsibilities that we need to take on. We feel like a community in conflict at this point in time with the wider denomination because they don't understand us. They don't know what we do. They think they have all the power, and we think we've got the power. And, you know, like, we could sit with that conversation in a radically different way. And we've begun that work by inviting congregations to have conversations with us. Let's get around this conflict and find ways that we can have a role here. And so mediator is part of it, and we're teachers when we go and have those conversations. It's not just the grand scale that needs third sides. It's the personal. It's the community. It's the neighborhood. It's the neighbors. We need to be third sides, and we need to be aware of how we can be. And so I've been really engaged with Yuri's work and would love to explore that further. Maybe we'll have a whole series on conflict and not limit it to Sunday mornings. But I think that we can be in the world. We are in the world in a way that will change it. We are. And each of you are, because you are light in this world. And you do that work. But we can do it in so many different ways. And I think our understanding it and owning those ways will allow us to do that work in an even greater way than we have ever imagined. So let's talk about that at another time. Thank you. There was one more thing I wanted to mention in the sharing time, but I was taking too much time, so I'll mention it now. Nora, who with her brother created this, a few weeks ago, many of you will have been here when she stood up in the sharing time and talked about a teacher. She was talking about not having been here for the Women Rock service, and so she wanted to honor a woman who had a distinct impression in her life. And she spoke so beautifully. It was clear and it was concise and it was lovely. And that morning when I was leaving the building, everyone else had gone home. It was probably in the afternoon. Everyone had gone home. And I came up to grab my papers. And lying on the floor in front of the table was a rock with Mrs. Taylor written on it that Nora had brought up at the end of the service and placed there. And it's been there ever since. And that's a West Hill moment, when we take the everyday stuff of our lives and we honor it in some way. We recognize that it's important, that it has value, that it's got weight, that it's got currency in our lives and in the lives of others. When we can reach out in any moment and be real with someone and acknowledge that realness, that's what we do. And that's what you do. So go from this place and do it. Do it well.
You have been listening to a podcast from West Hill United Church located in Scarborough, Ontario, Canada. These podcasts are made possible by the generous support of our listeners, volunteers, and members of our community. To donate, go to our website, www.westhill.net, and click on the Canada Helps button, or go to www.westhill.net/donate.